Hey, Snapper. Did you ever not quite understand what was happening or why it was going down? Well, maybe you haven't, but I certainly have. So we're dropping this bonus Snap Judgment episode, calling it Misunderestimated, featuring amazing stories from people who didn't quite get it. And I am so proud. But first, I want to give you a campaign update, because this program only happens when you make it happen. It takes the support of at least 5,000 Snappers to make your show go. And as of today, at last check, 1,236 Snappers have answered the challenge. They stepped up. Please step up with them. Go to snapjudgment.org right now to support the storytellers and stories that you love. Give whatever amazing storytelling is worth to you. $2, $2,000, whatever. We're marching down to Friday the 13th, Dark Friday, the end of the campaign. So I'm asking, Snapper, please pause the show right now. I know amazing storytelling awaits, but pause the show. First, go over to snapjudgment.org. Pick a great gift. We've got magic lamps. You can virtually join a Snap storytelling session. We'll even send you the best of Snap Live. Do whatever works for you, but please do at snapjudgment.org, because it's the only way this works. Snapjudgment.org. Now, I'm thrilled because we're going to kick off the Snap Judgment Misunderestimated special with the guy who was with us from day one. The very beginning, the first person I ever called. Please put your hands together for Josh Healy.
Last year, I went to the best wedding ever. It was in Connecticut, and my cousin Naomi was getting married to her girlfriend, Lisa. And it was a beautiful wedding. It was a beautiful wedding. All the families were there. The aunts, the uncles, the grannies, the babies. The Manischewitz wine was flowing out the hall like honey. The rabbi got drunk and punched out the DJ after having a nagila. It was awesome. But the best part about it, here were two women getting married, and it just wasn't a big deal. They were in love, and that was enough. Which was especially cool because my cousin Naomi had never really come out to the family. But we have this idea in America. It's like, you're not gay until I know that you're gay. And you know that I know that you're gay, then you're gay. Which makes no sense. It makes no sense. So I thought about this as a straight dude. Okay, as a mostly straight dude. Let's keep it real. I thought about what would it be like if straight folks had to come out too. So I imagine myself, 15 years old, having to come out to my parents, tell them the truth about what's going on. So I'm like, Mom, Dad, I have something I need to tell you. Mom, you're probably gonna wanna sit down for this. And the thing you have to understand about my parents is, my parents are super liberal. I mean, super crazy liberal. I'm talking pro-choice, pro-Cuba, pro-Lorax. They make Berkeley look like West Texas. So I know that somewhere in the back of their minds, they want a gay son. They need a gay son. It's like the missing badge of honor on their socialist Boy Scout uniforms. So here we are. I'm nervous. We're sitting at the kitchen table. My mom, sitting in full lotus position. My dad, standing beside her, gently massaging her shoulders like any good feminist husband would. And me, my legs are shaking. My voice is cracking. And I'm like, Mom! Dad, there's something I need to tell you. I don't know how to say it, so I'm just gonna say it. I'm straight. And they're like, no! 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 My mom just sits there, shaking her head, trying to find the center of her chi. And she's saying, where did we go wrong? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how this happened. It didn't just happen. I was born this way. But I tried to fit in. Lord knows I tried. I used to wear purple. I went to every Lady Gaga show I could, but no, no. I like Metallica. And bowling. And Mom and Dad, yes, I like women. And I like this one woman. And Mom, I want you to meet her. But I'm nervous. There's something you need to know about her first. I'm afraid to tell you, but you need to know, Mom, she's white. And they're like, no! And there goes another badge ripped off the socialists wanting to have a biracial grandbaby Boy Scout uniform. And I tell you this because it's tough and it's true. The beautiful tragedy of coming out straight in America.
That's right. Get ready for our next guest.
They're at the very beginning of Snap Judgment. A writer, poet, blah, 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 blah. This person, his name is Joshua Walters.
J'entends Santa, j'entends la oui, Koro Sato, Sarata, Soratu, Shotato, Shotato.
I don't speak French, but my GPS does. French speakers always get a little tickle when they're in the car.
Shotoka!
I met a French girl this year. Her name, Nathalie. From the south of France, where they make the triple cream zotota. She is a thinker. Americans, they act, and then they think. The French, they think, and then they think. She speaks English, but she has a French word for a certain a part of my anatomy. A certain gold part of my anatomy. She calls it Polpon. French love. J'entends, j'attends sans rire. Rons à chevalier. Jean sa chevalier. Zosacon. I don't speak French. So when I met Natalie's mother, she sounded like a bird. Which means, are you warm enough? I said, thank you. No need to worry. I have a mother of my own. This year, I also met another French speaker from Quebec, a Quebecois, a singer with a beautiful voice. She brought her mother too, a mother that did not speak like a bird, but like a French sailor. I decided I would have these two girls meet. So, on Purim, which is the Jewish holiday like Halloween, where Jews get dressed up in Halloween costumes and they drink so much they don't know the difference between right and wrong. These two French girls met each other and they started speaking only in French. They spoke in French for 3 hours, ignoring all the English speakers at the party. When everyone left, it was just the girls. And I looked at their faces and I thought, what love. But then Natalie got up and she decided to leave. Okay. I got worried. Because I was alone with the Quebecois. And temptation was strong. So I went to the bathroom and I did what 1/4 of all Americans do when they get nervous. I took La Meds. Usually I wait for the girl to go to the bathroom. But tonight, I was taking La Meds for one reason and one reason only. To kill Polpon. So I took them and I went downstairs where the Quebecois was. And she said, you know, I know you have a girlfriend, but I want you. And when a woman says she wants a man, there's very little he can do to resist. Unless he has La Meds. So there was a scuffle and I didn't know if Polpon was going to survive. I didn't know if the Meds were going to win or if Polpon was going to win. And there was a scuffle and 45 minutes in, finally, victory, France. Beats Canada. American pharmaceuticals are more powerful than French mojo. I fell asleep and Polpon was defeated. True love conquers all.
C'est la vie.
Snapper, I want to talk to you about genius. For these live stories, we flip the script on a regular process and hand the musical reins to Alex Mandel. And Alex, along with the Snap players, David Brandt and Tim Frick, they create an original composition to back the storytellers in real time. And here's the problem. Storytellers, especially Joshua Walters, whom you just heard, they don't tell their story the same way twice. So you have to compose, improvise, work off the storyteller and the audience to pull this off. And Alex is masterful. And if you appreciate the genius it takes to make that happen, support Snap Judgment right now at snapjudgment.org. In fact, we've been sending you a Snap Judgment mixtape download for your donation of $3 a month. If you kick it up to $4 a month, we'll add the best of Snap Judgment live. It's the greatest deal imaginable. Get it now at snapjudgment.org. Support the genius side that make this show happen. Your show happen. Give them love at snapjudgment.org. Now, next up, on the Miss Underestimated special, I get to introduce a dear friend of mine. You'd never know what to look at her, but Kate Ascott Evans has stories.
That's right. A warm welcome from Ms. Kate Ascott Evans.
Life in South Africa was rarely quiet. My parents were always fighting. I was 13 and all I wanted was a family that worked. And then I got an unusual chance to make that happen. It started when Abigail, my brand new pet mouse, suddenly gave birth to 7 beautiful pink babies. She built them a cotton wool nest and was such a happy mother, I decided to keep them. My mother agreed on one condition. The boys and the girls can't be together, huh, Kate? Because if there's one thing that breeds faster than rabbits, it's mice. Picking each mouse up by its tail and checking for tiny testicles, she determined there was only one male, Norman. But separating Norman seemed awful, so my mom suggested we just simply have him neutered. I agreed. The tiniest testicular surgery of all time was a success, and Abigail's family stayed intact. My family, however, would not. Very shortly afterwards, my parents announced that they were getting divorced, and it was a hard moment. I felt both heartbroken and relieved. I locked myself in my bedroom, and I went to go sit by my mice. And there by the food bowl, lying on his back with this huge blood clot over where his balls would have been, was Norman. He was dead, and it was my fault. My mother wasn't so sure. No, Kate, this had nothing to do with the surgery. No, nothing at all. Turned out that Norman wasn't the only male in the litter. His sisters, Vice Versa and Dapple, were also boys. But I had let Abigail down and killed her son. I was not going to split this family up any further. I told myself that I had raised them with good mouse morals, and the boys would just definitely not try sleep with their sisters. And then I had 40 mice. Now, I wasn't the only member of my human family to retreat into my own world. My mother took up astrology reading, and daily she had new proof that my dad really was the wrong man for her. You see, Kurt, your father, he is a Taurus with a Sagittarius rising. Mm? And that, Kurt, that means he doesn't listen. My father had taken a more Don Juan approach to coping. When I called his new home, I was greeted by messages like, "Hello, you've reached the love doctor. Here for all your love needs." Beep. "Hi, Pop, it's Kate. Just wanted to call and say hello." Perhaps in retaliation, my mom suggested that I relocate my mice to my dad's now empty home office, since he won't be needing it anymore. My dad moved out and Abigail's family moved in. My social life consisted of washing out cages and cutting up vegetables, all to keep this family happy. I had 80 mice. And then one day, I reached into the cage to check on the latest litter. The newborns were nowhere to be seen. And that's when I found it. A single, bloody, baby mouse head. I was freaked out. My mom reassured me, "It's natural. Because sometimes in nature, when animals get stressed, they just eat their young." But I knew I'd failed at being a good parent. By the time the tumors started appearing, I was in over my head. My father lovingly explained, "Well, what do you expect, Kate? You diluted the gene pool." The tumors were huge. They grew as rapidly as the mice bred. I was forced to quarantine the sick on the other side of my dad's office. Remembering the red disinfectant my mom used on my scrapes when I was little, nightly I dabbed cotton balls of mercurochrome onto their wounds and tumors. It didn't help. I had an infirmary of blood-red mutant mice. I had just turned 14. I had over 100 mice and a lot of death. Burying my dead pets was too much. I just wasn't ready to say goodbye. Instead, I took their tiny corpses, wrapped them in tissue, put them in a Ziploc bag marked mice, and put that in the freezer next to the strawberry ice cream. 14, with a mice morgue. The stress took its toll. I had nightmares, insomnia. I wandered the house like a strung-out zombie until finally there came a point where my mom looked up from her tarot cards and for the first time in a while, she really saw me. "No, no, no more, Kate. Uh-uh. They're going to the pet store." I kept 3 mice, including Abigail. I said goodbye to 132 others. And once again, I felt both heartbroken and relieved. When we got home, the house was eerily quiet. No shouting parents, no squeaking mice. My mom helped me pack up all of the now empty cages, and looking at all the chaos, I thought of Norman, how my need to keep the family together had led to all of this. On my dad's desk, one cage remained, and inside it, Abigail, was building a nest for her new, smaller family. Thank you.
Kate Ascott Evans. Snapper, Kate just rocked that story. It didn't happen by accident. It happened at the end of a process. And maybe you have a story of your own that needs telling. Of course you do. So I'm going to live stream a special session on how to tell the story you were born to tell. On the page, on the stage, at work, at the bar. Sign up right now at snapjudgment.org. Or maybe you want to see how the sausage gets made here at Snap. Well, you can become a virtual, behind-the-scenes Snap producer. We're going to throw back the curtain and live stream a Snap story meeting. You get a backstage pass, and you help decide what goes in and what stays out of a brand new Snap. You can see the Uber producer fight it out with Davey Kim. You're going to dig it for just $6 a month. And did I mention that both of these gifts include the Snap mixtape and the Best of Snap Judgment Live download? Get it all right now at snapjudgment.org. Support the storytelling you love by learning to tell your own story. It's a good deal, right, Snapper? So pause the show. Stop everything. Go over to snapjudgment.org. We'll wait. Support Snap Storytelling to the extent it enriches your life. Snapjudgment.org. Now, on the Snap Miss Underestimated special, we're going to close with one of my favorite storytellers in all the land, Reeves.
Next, one of my personal storytelling heroes. Please put your hands together for Reeves.
Hello, Ann Arbor. I worked my way through college as a waiter. The last place I worked, this upscale bistro in Los Angeles, is where I met my oddest table ever, and I had a hex put on me. It's a Friday night. We've just opened for the evening, and two ladies walk in together. Two very pale ladies wearing very dark lace dresses. Whatever the plural of Stevie Nicks is, that's what we're talking about. I'm going to call them Black Magic Woman 1 and Black Magic Woman 2. They sit down on table 20 and they do not have a good meal. A lot of complaints with the casserole, with the herbal tea selection, and they are acting really spacey, but they're my only table at this point, so I do the usual. I give them, spacey notwithstanding, genuinely solid service. Still, when they leave, I notice they don't tip me at all. Yeah, they stiff me, which, by the way, don't. That's no big deal. It's not even a bad omen for the night. I'm still gonna make great money this shift, right? So, you know, let's do that. Good 2 hours go by. The restaurant's really hopping now. I'm back in the prep area, and the manager approaches me with this weird, stern demeanor, and he says, "Okay, buddy, hand over those keys." I say, "Well, what are we talking about?" My manager says, "I'm messing with you. Those two cranky ladies from table 20 earlier are back. This time, they say they left their keys behind and that you got them. They're telling me it's a key ring with a pewter Merlin figurine on it. It's not in Lost and Found. Do you want to talk to him about it?" I say, "Well, no, just tell him I don't have their keys." And he goes off to do that, and I go off to do my job. I'm really busy. About 5 minutes later, I'm at the ordering terminal in the dining room, and Black Magic Woman 2 sort of materializes just right beside me. She says, "You must listen. The reason we did not tip you is because we felt you gave us inferior service, but that does not justify you taking our keys. My friend is in communion with very powerful forces, and you already have a hex on you. The only way to remove this hex is to return those keys." So I shoot my manager the save me face. He hurries over, and Black Magic Woman 2 says, did you search this waiter's pockets? And I volunteer right there. Let's do this. Apron pockets, pants pockets, front, back. No keys. Black Magic Woman 2 consults with Black Magic Woman 1, comes back over, and says, my friend has had a vision. And be aware, my friend has solved many crimes for the LAPD with her psychic gifts. She says that this waiter has put the keys in the trash can of the employee break room. Did you look there? Which my manager sort of jumps on and says, I didn't look through any garbage for your missing keys. But I tell you what, if I let you do it, are we good? Either way, you find the keys, you leave. You don't find the keys, you leave. And the women agree. And so my manager takes them both back past the salad station and the dishwashers to our grungy little employee break room. And I'm so curious, I pretend to get a cheesecake out of the walk-in refrigerator so I can witness this. Black Magic Woman 1 overseeing from the doorway while Black Magic Woman 2 paws through the garbage in the employee break room trash can. And this is where events have gone too far, have certainly turned uncanny, and where I have wound up truly, uncomfortably edgy, because I did take the keys. I took the keys. But when I took the keys, I had zero intention of keeping them. None, I promise. It's just that people stiff you all the time, and people leave things behind all the time, but never in my experience both, like these ladies had done. And I guess I just wanted them to have to encounter me once more before I handed the keys over, smooth and gallant even. Oh, you're back. Bet you're looking for these. There you go. Drive safe was the plan. But when my manager approached me instead of the ladies like I'd been imagining, plus he seemed to be bluffing about something, I freaked. And I hid those keys underneath the trash can of the employee break room. 5 minutes later, I'm out there on the floor pantomiming innocence, and now I'm standing with a cheesecake I do not need. And I am shaking in my waiter shoes, because it does not matter where you land on the intuition to superstition spectrum. Black Magic Woman 1's coordinates are pinpoint. If Black Magic Woman 2 lifts up the trash can, we will all see a pewter Merlin figurine holding a little pewter staff with a little fake sapphire at the tip. But she does not. And so Black Magic Woman 1 and 2 leave the upscale bistro, possibly forever. And you know who comes into the bistro? This is much later. Things have died down in the restaurant, in my rib cage. It's a Los Angeles police officer. He's got this warm, tolerant smile on his face. He says, I know you know why I am here. I just need to hear your side of the story with this key business. So I tell him my side of the story, and the cop says, well, it's funny. I'm sure that woman seems pretty kooky to you, but I know her. We all know her down at the station. The stuff she does for us, it's amazing. I mean, she's not always right, but when she is spot freaking on. It would blow your mind, but it's not a science, right? So hey, try not to be offended. And I say, no, I mean, yes, I will try not to do what you have said to be. And that was it. That's all. Half an hour later, we closed up the restaurant, and I walked with those keys just baking in my pocket to a bus stop on the corner, my bus stop, and that's where I put the keys. I put them right under an oleander bush. Those keys were not noticeable to the average passerby, but I hoped, I certainly told myself, they were obvious enough if you knew where to look.
The Mighty Reeves, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you know that SNAP is a small, independent arts organization. We're out there throwing punches with the big guys for one reason and one reason only. Because SNAPers have our back. And you've reached the end of another SNAP program. Think about that. It's not the first time you've reached the end of a SNAP program, because this is in you. This is your thing. To support the storytelling you love so much, you're listening to a fundraising episode. Support it at snapjudgment.org. You'll feel better. You'll feel lighter. You'll feel sexier, I promise. Snapjudgment.org. And yes, yes, an all-new Snap drops this Friday. It's incredible. It's all because the Snap never sleeps. Support us taking a nap. SnapJudgment.org.